the headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country's military campaign in Ukraine will achieve its results. The Israeli military demolishes more Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank under the pretext of lacking construction permits. And at least two people are killed and scores wounded in Sri Lanka as the nationwide protests intensify over the government's mishandling of the economy. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Moscow's military operation in Ukraine will undoubtedly yield results. Putin says all the campaign plans are coming to fruition. He made the remarks during the annual military parade in Moscow's Red Square, marking the country's victory over Nazi Germany in 1945. The Russian president condemned what he called the moral degradation of the West. He said the NATO expansion is a direct threat to Moscow, accusing the West of plotting to invade Russian land. Putin said Russian forces involve the military action in Ukraine, fighting for the security of their motherland. He added, those fighting in the Donbass region resemble the heroes of World War II. Political analyst John Bosnich believes Putin's Victory Day speech has given the Russian president an opportunity to paint a clearer picture of why he began the Ukraine offensive.
Russia has intervened in Ukraine to stop a war, not to start a war. There was an outcry of outrage in the Western mainstream media on February 24th when the special military operation began. But those same media were silent for the 8 years of preceding war that provoked the Russian intervention to protect the ethnic Russian population of southeastern Ukraine, which has now declared itself as independent and has been recognized as an independent area, actually two independent republics, people's republics, recognized by Moscow. So the picture of the war in the former Ukraine, in the now Donbass, has been completely skewed by what's called by Donald Trump the lying mainstream media of the West. And this opportunity today gives President Putin the chance to let the world public know that there has been a war. It was a war of aggression against the civilian population, an originally unarmed civilian population that Russia has effectively saved through a humanitarian intervention. And we know from the statistics from the operation that Russia has been running in Ukraine that the Russian military forces have done everything they can to avoid civilian casualties and are specifically focusing on their main mission, which is denazification.
Ukrainian officials urge people to stay in shelters, citing the possibility of more rocket attacks by Russia. Ukraine's deputy defense minister says the danger of missile strikes persists throughout the country, with the greatest challenges being faced in the south and the east of the country. This as Ukraine's military says four high-precision missiles fired from the Russian-controlled Crimea Peninsula struck the Odessa area in southern Ukraine. It did not provide more details earlier. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said 60 people were killed in the Russian bombing of a school in a village in the country's east. According to Ukrainian officials, the school was sheltering about 90 people when it was hit. Germany is feeling the pinch of anti-Russian sanctions more than any European country. The German banking chief has warned that his country could face a wave of bankruptcies. That is while Germany is Europe's biggest economy. This raises a question. How much longer will the EU push for Russian sanctions when it is hurting the EU economies?
Europe's largest economy, Germany, is going through a historic phase. Inflation rates have risen sharply, reaching a 40-year high, with soaring energy prices being the key driving force. According to the German Federal Statistics Agency, the Statis, consumer prices were about 7.5% higher in April compared to last year. Berlin also faces an imminent recession in case of a gas supply cut from Russia. The latest remarks by the chief executive officer of a major commercial bank in Germany have increased concerns inside the country. Manfred Knopf has warned that the energy supply in Germany is at risk, which may lead to the spread of bankruptcies in the country. Quoted by a German business newspaper, Knopf said the energy supply is at risk. Supply chains are breaking in addition to high inflation in the country. He also warned that bankruptcies in German markets are probably going to increase. According to the executive, almost a third of Germany's foreign trade has been impacted as well. Germany is facing soaring energy prices and a skyrocketing inflation due to the imposition of sanctions on Russia to pressure Moscow into ending the war in Ukraine. The measures mainly affected the financial sector and the supply of high-tech products. The real crisis in Germany lies in the Russian gas, on which it depends to a large extent. Berlin was one of the opponents within the EU to ban the import of Russian gas, but the scenario changed completely after it announced recently its readiness to accept an immediate ban on Russian oil and gas supplies. According to Forbes, Germany is one of the largest customers of Russian oil, and Berlin depends on a third of its Russian oil imports, 45% of its coal purchases, and 55% of its gas imports from Russia. Economists believe the immediate suspension of Russian energy imports would cause a severe recession in Germany.
The EU is not allowed to stop. This is what Washington ordered, and Washington orders the EU around. And the crazy situation right now is that Washington was never as powerful as it is today. This is especially funny since the American president is a weak president. So obviously somebody else is inserting this pressure into the EU from Washington, and I think that is the American deep state pushing Joe Biden and the EU, both of them. And as long as nobody stops this kind of power wielding, it will continue.
The Israeli military has razed two more Palestinian homes in the occupied West Bank under the pretext of lacking a construction permit. Regime forces carried out the demolitions in a village east of Nablus. They also attacked local Palestinians protesting against the move with tear gas and rubber bullets. 36 civilians were injured in that violence. The Israeli military frequently demolishes homes where Palestinian families have been living for decades. The regime has destroyed hundreds of such structures in the occupied West Bank and East al-Quds over the past years, despite widespread condemnation by international rights groups. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Muna Kandela, says that the Israeli regime always refuses to issue construction permits for Palestinians.
Israeli forces raided the town of Beit Dajan, East Nablus, in northern the occupied West Bank, accompanying bulldozers in order to destroy Palestinian homes. According to our local sources there, the two homes were under construction. Each home was two floors and owned by two different Palestinian families. The Israeli military claims that Beit Dajan is a Palestinian village that is located in Area C. Area C is under Israeli military and security control. Also this morning, Israeli forces destroyed two residential homes in an area near Tobas called Khirbet Aynon, Palestinian village. It's the same called by the Israelis that Palestinians should not construct homes without getting Israeli issued permits, but at the same time they do not give the Palestinians these permits. At the same time, also Israeli settlers have a green line to expand their homes and to build more settler units to annex Palestinian lands, to seize more Palestinian lands and annex it to the Israeli settlements. But on the other hand, Palestinians are being rejected getting permits to build on their own lands in the occupied West Bank.
Meanwhile, social media is filled with angry reactions to the recent Israeli decision to build 4,000 new settler units in the occupied Palestinian territories. Hashtag trending takes a quick look at those comments.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, your host Ali Reza. The construction of Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories has long been a source of major dispute. The regime has constantly been expanding its settlement projects despite the international outcry against the move. The move which, if it needs to be said, is illegal under international law. In another act of aggression against the Palestinians, Israeli authorities have approved a plan to construct 4,000 new settlement units in the occupied Palestinian territories. And in order to do that, they will have to demolish 12 Palestinian villages and deport more than 1,300 Palestinians from their home. Activists and social media users are now calling for an international boycott of Israel in a bid to stop its crimes against the Palestinians. They say that the regime's expansion of its settlements constructions in violation of international law is meant to ensure that there will be no Palestinian state. Our first tweet of the day comes from Ala Iman. Israel is a brutal military occupation whose goal is to steal more land by military force to establish illegal settlements on Palestinian land. It is time to boycott them completely and stop their crimes against the Palestinian people. Here we have our next tweet. It's written by Doki Doki Cloud. Daily reminder that Israel keeps violating international law by continuously building their illegal settlements. These despicable settlers were brought here from some countries in Europe, and look what they keep spouting. And the IDF military allows it. Emma DM has our next tweet. For Israel, settlements have two main functions: to ensure that the occupied territories remain under constant and perpetual control of Israel, and to ensure that there will never be a Palestinian state. Meanwhile, the Geneva Council of Rights and Freedom says that Israel's expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and the seizure and transfer of their land to settlers amount to forced displacement and are tantamount to a war crime. Our next tweet comes from Jane Samuels. She said, deportation of over 1,000 people in favor of expanding settlements, outposts, and training of Israeli soldiers is not only a humanitarian catastrophe, it's a clear step in de facto annexation of occupied Palestinian territories. And over here we have a picture of the occupation over the years posted by Eugenie. Is this making peace? Make peace for Israel was always just calm, continued occupation. Peace was just capitulation in disguise. Israel has zero credibility today, pretending that they never wanted settlements, but they magically happen. And you can see the progression of this occupation since 1946 to 1947, 67, and 2012, and like a lot more of this happened since 2012. This is just a rather old image of the occupation. Hazel Sharat said, 80% of the Israeli settlement's waste is dumped on occupied Palestinian territory. 97% of drinking water in Gaza is unfit for consumption. Israel's illegal occupation of Palestine has weaponized the environment, and AXA, it's an investment group, is complicit. Divest from Israeli apartheid now. Many are criticizing the United States for its support of the Israeli regime and giving it a privileged status by vetoing UN resolutions against Tel Aviv despite its continuous atrocities against the Palestinians. Warren McLeod said that every time the UN raises a resolution against Israel, the US vetoes it. Israel has privileged status regardless of their atrocities and constant expansion of their settlements in occupied territory, contravening international humanitarian law. Eric Gandara said the Republican and Democratic administrations since 1967 have asked Israel not to build in the settlements. Israel continues to expand settlements. The U.S. needs to back its words with actions on ground. Irfu Patel has our next tweet. Israel is an occupying entity established on Palestinian blood in 1948. Israel continues to expand its settlements on Palestinian land. The demolition of Palestinian homes and the killing of Palestinian people is this peace. And the final comment comes from BDS movement, boycott, divest, sanction. Since 1967, Israel has been demolishing homes and stealing land and water of indigenous Palestinians in the Jordan Valley, de facto and annexing most of the area to build illegal settlements and confining Palestinians who remain in shrinking enclaves. Hashtag sanctions on apartheid. That's been it for this edition of Hashtag Trending. Many thanks. Let's head back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
Sri Lanka's prime minister resigns amid ongoing political and economic crises in the island nation. A spokesman for the prime minister said the prime minister sent his letter of resignation to his brother, the president, clearing the way for a new unity government. The announcement came shortly after clashes broke out between the prime minister's supporters and anti-government protesters. Officials say two died, including an MP from the ruling party, and nearly 140 others were injured in the scuffles. Police have imposed an indefinite curfew in the country's capital, Colombo. Sri Lankans have been enduring months of raging inflation, power blackouts, and acute shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. And vote counting begins in the Philippines as the ballots close in the election to choose a successor for incumbent President Rodrigo Duterte. Officials say that the voter turnout has been encouraging as expected. More than 65 million Filipinos were eligible to cast their ballots. 10 candidates are vying for the top executive post. Marcos Jr., the son of the former dictator Ferdinand Marcos, and Lenny Robredo, the incumbent vice president, are the top contenders. But pre-election surveys show Marcos, who campaigned with a message of unity and rekindling a former greatness, was far ahead of his opponents. He is also favorite because he is running in tandem with Duterte's daughter, Sarah, who is vying for vice presidency. Monday's vote was held in tight security. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
While the U.S. public has witnessed and experienced an unfathomable amount of death and tragedy over the course of the pandemic, U.S. billionaires have made out like kings and massively increased their wealth over the course of just over 2 years, new data shows. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Sharon Zhang, journalist. This article is published under the heading, "As over a million have died of COVID, U.S. billionaires have gained $1.7 trillion. Here's more. While the U.S. public has witnessed and experienced an unfathomable amount of death and tragedy over the course of the pandemic, U.S. billionaires have made out like kings and massively increased their wealth over the course of just 2 years, new data shows. According to an analysis by the Institute for Policy Studies, IPS, American billionaires have added a colossal $1.71 trillion to their wealth since March 2020. With an over 58% growth in their wealth, U.S. billionaires are now worth a collective $4.67 trillion. This is a towering figure. It amounts to nearly 25% of the U.S. GDP, $19.74 trillion, split between 727 people. The $1.71 trillion that billionaires have accumulated over a pandemic could pay for the entirety of the Build Back Better Act, Congressional Democrats' reconciliation bill that was slated to implement President Joe Biden's social safety net and climate program last year. Alternatively, their wealth gain alone could pay off nearly all student loans, which are burdening 45 million Americans. IPS's report comes as the U.S. has hit 1 million deaths due to COVID-19. According to an NBC analysis, though the real death toll is likely higher. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, a large portion of COVID deaths were uncounted, meaning the total could be closer to 1.29 million deaths or more. When 100,000 people had died due to COVID in May 2020, the New York Times labeled the milestone as incalculable. 10 times that amount represents a loss beyond words, but perhaps not for billionaires, especially those who have seen their wealth skyrocket. Over the past 2 years, Elon Musk's wealth multiplied by over 10 times during the pandemic. In March 2020, he was worth $24.6 billion, an already huge amount for any individual. And he's worth $255 billion and is the richest person in the world among those whose net worth is publicly available. Omar Ocampo, a co-author of IPS report, told reporters, "This jarring juxtaposition clearly illustrates that the work and strength of the working class have made U.S. billionaires wealthier, yet continue to bear the brunt of the pandemic. A strengthened labor movement and progressive taxation are both necessary to strengthen workers' rights and make available to us the resources needed to increase investment in our healthcare system," unquote. Others who were already shockingly wealthy also accumulated even more money during the pandemic. Jeff Bezos' wealth shot up by nearly a third, from $113 billion to $150 billion. Bill Gates also gained about a third of his previous net worth, with his wealth growing from $98 billion to $130 billion. Three members of the Watson family, who control more than 50% of Walmart, have seen their collective wealth grow by about 27% to $207.7 billion.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
Dear brothers and sisters, welcome back to our third edition. The lecture series this year is called The Transition. And what we've started with this year is the Barzakh, our beginning or our initial stage as we transfer from this world into our final abode. Now what we'd like to talk about a little bit is the idea of the squeeze in the grave. If you look at some of the ahadith, it seems that almost everybody gets a taste of the squeezing in the grave. But then I'm going to mention another hadith from Imam Sadiq, that again gives us hope that if we're able to take care of certain things, maybe we can avoid it. Let's see. Let's look at the hadith. The first one says this, إِنَّهُ لَيْسَ مِنْ مُؤْمِنٍ إِلَّا وَلَهُ ذَمَّ. There is no believer, the first hadith, there is no believer except that this person will be crushed in the grave. To what extent? Allahu A'la. On the other side, though, we do have that hopeful hadith from the Imam where he tells us, the man was asking, he said, well, all those wonderful things, again, it was Abu Basir, if all of those wonderful things that you described take place, what about the getting squeezed in the grave? And the Imam said, Hayhat, ma ala al-mu'minina minha shay'un. Mu'mineen don't have any of that. So the levels of Iman are different, but it's something that's definitely to be there. It is definitely one of those things that's a mention. Now, there are certain things that the Ahlul Bayt have said cause this, meaning out of all of the sins, because I mean, obviously, our chance in this world is to, first of all, make tawbah. If there's something that we've done, let's make up for it. Why wait to face these things? Why have it be, as it's mentioned in some of the ahadith, it's kafara. Why go into the next world with a kafara, with sins that I haven't made up for? It's better to take care of it here. But what are some of the sins, some of the problems, the issues, the spiritual diseases that the Ahlul Bayt have said, if you have these, then this is something that really needs to be, we need to be concerned about. The first one is called taking the prayer lightly. This is different than abandoning prayer. Some people just don't pray. It's just, the Imam is there, inshallah, he'll save me, the love of the Ahlul Bayt. But there's other people who know, they do that, but then the prayer for them just isn't that serious. If I pray it late, if I pray it on time, it's just, it's not a biggie. I don't place importance on the prayer, which is something that we see that our ulama have warned us about. So Lady Fatima asked her father, what happens to the person who takes prayer lightly? Again, as I said, this is different from the person, the hadith, the other said, the person who just abandons prayer, that's kufr. What about the person, Ya Abata, مَا لِمَنْ تَهَاوَنَ بِصَلَاتِهِ مِنَ الرِّجَالِ وَالنِّسَاءِ. For those men and women who don't take the prayer quite as seriously as they should, what happens to those people? The Prophet explained that there were actually 15 punishments, but three of them are related to our discussion. One of them is that Allah will set an angel on this person to torture and torment the person in the grave. This is one of the ways of the person being purified. There will be an angel to deal with that person in the grave. The second one he mentions, وَيُضَيَّقُ عَلَيْهِ قَبْرُهُ. The grave will, this person will be under a lot of pressure from the grave. And the third one is that instead of the grave being light, remember we talked about the good mu'min, how the grave will be expanded, the door from heaven. This person who takes the prayer lightly will find that the grave is very dark. Another one that's mentioned, number two, are those people who don't take the rules of Tahara and Najasa seriously. Now, again, this doesn't mean falling into the trap of waswas, which is a sin. That's a sin. So we're not talking about going above and beyond. The Ahlul Bayt have said, consider this Tahir. We consider it Tahir. It's a sin to act on waswas. We're not talking about that. But there's some people who just, it's just not that important. It's clean. Who cares? The rules. And you see that sometimes. That's actually one of those things that can lead to the squeezing in the grave. The third one is actually really important. In some of the hadith, it says a third of the squeezing and the pressure in the grave comes from this third one. And that is ghibah, backbiting. I don't know how many of us remember when we read the statement of Imam Khomeini. I mean, not the statement. Many of us have probably read the 40 hadith, and there's beautiful discussions over there. One of the discussions is about the concept of ghiba. This hadith was the first time I saw this hadith was over there, where he quotes, this is a hadith from Imam Ali. It says, اجتنب الغيبة, avoid backbiting, stay away from it. Don't do it, because remember, in Islam, listening to ghiba is also a sin. So one time, God forbid, I'm the person who will talk about others. And of course, there are some exceptions. When is it allowed? We need to find that, like any other rule. When is it allowed for me? When is someone allowed to do riba? But let's say it's one of the cases where I'm not actually backbiting, but I'm listening when somebody else does it. And I don't defend the person. Because if you look in the rulings, they say that either you try and say, no, inshallah, that's not the case. But sometimes the way the person's explained, there's no way to say that that didn't happen. Then you again say something like, well, people can make mistakes, somehow defending the person that, but let's say somebody didn't do that. The imam says, he says, avoid backbiting. He says it's part of the, it's the food of the dogs of hell. Inshallah, when I go a little bit further into the actions taking on a corporal form, you'll see what that means. But in the meantime, one of those that's to really be avoided is backbiting. Another one that you'll find is very serious, and it can out or undo a lot of our good deeds, is if we are not the most pleasant of people to be around in our homes. So it might be that the story that I'm about to share is about a father. He was a father, and unfortunately, his akhlaq was not the best in the home. But it might be a son, a daughter, a sibling, people who are working closely with another group of people. And what's so interesting is sometimes you'll find that the person's oblivious to how others feel from them. Like it's hard to even correct a person sometimes because I don't see how toxic of a person I am. There was one time when at least I know that, look, that's an area that needs to be addressed. I'm not very pleasant to be around. I'm not a pleasure to talk to. It's not easy to hang out with me. I make life hard. People walk on eggshells around me. But you'll find sometimes people didn't even know. Now, the story that's shared and the thing, and it just makes us, again, so concerned, is because the person who unfortunately had this, and we all got to learn this lesson, was one of the great companions of the Prophet. To the extent that some of the researchers said that if he stood with, if he was alive, at the time of Saqifah, he would have been one of those people who would have turned the tides. He was that kind of a strong companion. And of course, when he died, the Prophet took care of the burial rituals himself. He was walking with the, escorting the body. The Prophet didn't have the abba on, or the cloak on, he didn't have shoes on, he's walking barefoot. Then not only that, he would put his hand on different areas as they're carrying the body. The Prophet's moving his hand to one side, the Prophet's moving his hand to the other side. After that, then the Prophet, the burial rituals, all these things, the Prophet over there smoothing out the grave. And then after that, his mom was so happy about it, she was like, "Ya Sa'd, haniyan lakal jannah." Just watch what the Prophet did. You're definitely, your place is in paradise. And right there, the Prophet stopped her. He said, "Umm Sa'd, don't make a rule for God. Don't say something definite's going to happen. Right now, Sa'd got that squeeze." The believers, they waited till everything ended. Then they came to the Prophet and they asked him, they said, "Well, what did we just see? We see you walking." He said, "Well, there were so many angels." He had told him 70,000 angels. Hand on the right side, hand on the left side. That was Angel Jibreel. My hand was in his hand. You did all of these things. And then after that, then the Prophet said the sentence. "Na'am, innahu kana fi khulqihi ma ahlihi su'a." Unfortunately, he wasn't the easiest person to get along with at home. So, as I said, if it can outdo somebody who was at that low. I mean, the poor guy, the reason he died was he was hit with an arrow and then finally he bled out and he died and then he went back to meet Allah. But still, that didn't cancel out how he mistreated people. He's just mean. And some people are like that. Very good Muslim, makes salat, pays zakat, do so many good, but I'm just mean. Words are harsh. Not a pleasure to be around.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is irib.ir.
روحي كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
Anxiety is never going to be fun, but it can be healthy. And facing up to it is always better than hiding. We have prepared for you an article written by Kate Smith. The piece is titled, Anxiety Can Be Good For You. The article has been published by the British newspaper The Guardian. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari was a professor of psychology immersed in research, evaluating which mental health treatments worked and why, when she first became aware of an uptick in anxiety. This was some 15 years ago in New York City. She says, I work closely with practicing clinicians and I remember one of them saying, I'm seeing all these parents and kids coming in and they're talking about anxiety the way we used to talk about stress. She added, everything is about anxiety. Back then, Dr. Dennis Tiwari believed treatments would make a difference. She says, I thought we were going to claw this back, but the opposite happened. Instead, that uptick became an avalanche. Today, anxiety disorders are the most common mental health issue in the United States, affecting 30% of adults. In Britain, prescriptions for anti-anxiety medications have almost doubled over the past 15 years, with a sharp rise among the under-25s. In the US, prescriptions have quadrupled. In 2021, a survey of 8,000 children led Oxford University Press to name anxiety as the word of the year. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari says, "It's the word on everyone's lips, the challenge of the moment. We have configured ourselves to think of ourselves as an anxious society. We have a million great self-help books, scientifically validated treatments. We have 30 different anti-anxiety medications, but the field has not kept pace with the treatment and prevention of physical disease. None of it is sticking." She notes, "I was part of the problem, however well-intentioned, until I started to wake up about a decade ago and began thinking, wait a second, what are we saying to people? The idea that anxiety is something to manage or eradicate, a habit to be broken, is wrong and actually doing us harm. It's literally a recipe for more anxiety." This is the central message in Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari's new book, Future Tense. She concludes that the problem isn't anxiety itself, but our beliefs about it and our attempts to avoid it, which are not only destined to fail, but also to make us weaker, more fragile. It's a vicious cycle. To help reframe anxiety as an ally and not an enemy, Future Tense takes a deep dive into the emotion itself. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari says, "Anxiety is very different to fear. Fear is the certainty that something bad is happening to you. Anxiety is about uncertainty. It's the feeling that something bad could happen, but might not. It's the discrepancy between where you are and where you want to be. So you're anxious about failing your exams, finding your first job." She says, "Anxiety is designed to feel bad. Your heart races, your blood vessels contract, so you sit up and listen," adding, "But unlike fear, anxiety contains hope. Our dopamine levels increase. That's the feel-good hormone that happens when we're rewarded. The distant prospect of acing those exams, of getting a clean bill of health, or landing your chosen career is the dopamine talking. Anxiety can focus the mind, drive you to revise harder, to see a doctor, to seek new pathways towards your chosen career." Dr. Dennis Tiwari says, "It's a horrible emotion, it feels terrible. But it's a beautiful emotion as well." The key distinction between anxiety and an anxiety disorder is functional impairment, when our ways of coping impede our normal life. Perhaps we stop leaving the house. In cases of obsessive compulsive disorder, we might create rituals to dampen the feelings. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari advocates treatments like exposure and response prevention, a cognitive behavioral therapy, which helps patients confront whatever they're anxious about. But her biggest wish is to change our approach at a much earlier stage so that anxiety won't drift into a disorder. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari says, "First, it's the understanding that being anxious is not a malfunction. It's a helpful and useful," adding, "If you wake up with that feeling, it's worth tuning in and sitting on it for a while. Why are you feeling like this? She gives the example of her first pregnancy when she learned that her son would require open-heart surgery within months of his birth. Her anxiety was off the scale, but it energized her to do everything in her power to minimize the odds of the worst outcome imaginable. She gathered knowledge from every paper ever published about her son's condition. She found the best possible surgeon. She planned for every contingency. Anxiety helps us forge forwards with creative solutions, but there are times when there is little we can do to address a future uncertainty. Dr. Tracy Dennis-Tiwari suggests many ways of coping here. Connecting with friends and family is a soothing first step. Cultivating things that immerse you in the present moment is also helpful. She says, mindfulness is one technique, but whatever works for you. Exercise is an incredible way to find flow and bring yourself to the present. Music, whether you perform or listen to it. Walking in nature, I love to write poetry. Bad poetry most of the time, but it leads me to a state of expansive thinking. Making a daily to-do list can claw back some sense of control and achievement. The worst possible response is to instead stamp out the feeling or attempt to avoid it. Dr. Tracy Dennis-Tiwari says humans are anti-fragile. We only strengthen and grow when challenged. She says, our emotional systems are like our immune systems. If our immune system isn't exposed to germs, it remains weak. If our muscles aren't used, atrophy sets in. It's only by feeling our anxiety, listening and acting on it, that we cope better next time. For this reason, Dr. Tracy Dennis-Tiwari expresses grave concerns over our creeping collective anxiety avoidance techniques, like safe spaces and trigger warnings. She says, I think they're counterproductive and so far the evidence suggests that too. What they tend to do is inform someone that they're not up to the task and that difficult emotions are harmful. Snowplow parenting is another counterproductive development. Dr. Tracy Dennis-Tiwari says, here in Manhattan, it has replaced the helicopter parent. This removal of obstacles, fixing things before they've happened. I know it's so hard being a parent, it takes everything for me not to step in. But we have to have faith in our kids, acknowledge their emotions, show we have confidence they can figure it out. We need to help them through, not around. Dr. Tracy Dennis-Tiwari says, this speaks to me. In 2020, my youngest daughter was the target of some harmful behavior at her school. She came off her phone. She caught contact with her friends. Within weeks, the schools had closed. Two, the country in lockdown. And my daughter's anxiety over ever going back or making new friends was sky high. I was so tempted to lift that weight off her back by telling her she never had to. I came close. I thought about moving house. I inquired about other schools. I researched homeschooling. But then what? At some point, she'd have to step back into the world. The kids from her school lived all around us. On social media, they'd never be more than a click away. I knew that the best outcome was the hardest, to go back. She says, strangely, in the months that followed, my daughter used many of the methods outlined in Future Tense. She filled notebooks with lists that she carefully ticked off each day. At first, they were basic. Shower, wash hair, But as she began to follow interests and find meaningful distractions, teenagers without phones have a lot of hours to fill, they became more character building. Meditate, French Duolingo, leg workout with weights. Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari says, "My own anxieties brought some horrible physical effects, loss of appetite, my clothes stopped fitting. But my mind whirled with ideas, new ways to build her up. Some actually worked. She attended a film course where she bonded with a girl over a shared interest, still one of her closest friends. Though we weren't going on holiday that summer, I asked a family in Madrid, Spain, if they knew a teenage girl interested in a fortnight's exchange. My daughter returned from that trip the happiest and most relaxed I'd ever seen her." Dr. Tracy Dennis Tiwari concludes by saying, "At school, it probably took a full year before my daughter felt safe in new friendships. Anxiety brought her to rock bottom, but by sitting with it, getting through, not around, she's deeper, stronger, and so much wiser. I couldn't be prouder. It's horrible, it feels terrible, but it's beautiful too."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of the speech delivered on April 12, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the government officials of the Islamic Republic. Recently, one of these American clones, that is John Bolton, said that they would celebrate Christmas in Iran. Such statements are made, but the gap between reality and what they say is really wide. Therefore, when you see that the Americans explicitly say that the maximum pressure policy against Iran suffered a humiliating defeat, this is a very great and important issue. That arrogant, proud, and overconfident U.S. acknowledges that the maximum pressure policy against Iran suffered a humiliating defeat is a very important issue. Therefore, my dear ones, we must not become arrogant, nor should we become passive or lose our morale. We should become neither proud nor passive. These were two recommendations that I wanted to offer. There are a few professional recommendations that I will discuss as well if it does not take long. One is about the slogan of the year, which was about production with two characteristics, being knowledge-based and being capable of creating employment. They criticized me saying that these two things are not compatible with one another. They are right. In certain cases, this holds true.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The more advanced technology becomes, the less will be the need for manpower. Some people sent a message asking, will things be like this? My answer is yes. In certain cases, this is what happens. But this does not hold true for us because we have many factories which are either closed or half closed in downstream areas. Therefore, if companies become knowledge-based, these factories and companies will be positively affected as well. In other words, this will help increase job opportunities by several times. This is how it is. Therefore, we can create employment. Besides, new technologies have a natural tendency to expand. That is to say, the more we make progress in technological matters, the more available arenas we will have. So, creating employment will not be harmed and making production knowledge-based can be worked on along with creating job opportunities.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.